Hi, this is Zoe Durand, and I'm a family lawyer and mediator, and you're listening to the Inside Family Law podcast. This podcast is presented by Mediation Answers in partnership with Artwork and Lawyer Magic. Over the course of these episodes, I will take you on a 360-degree deep dive into all aspects of the family law process by talking with some of the greatest minds in family. I'm hoping that through this podcast, we can really encourage interdisciplinary conversations and perspectives that allow us to go deeper into what is really going on in the family law process, and that also make us more curious in our approaches to family law and how we do what we do every day. Hi, this is Zoe Durand. I'm here at the Pacifica Congress Conference live. We're here in Hobart for their 2023 conference. And I'm here with Dr. Kayleen Evers. Can you just firstly, for our listeners, introduce who you are, what you do?
Hi, Zoe. I'm Kayleen Evers. I practice privately in Melbourne. I wear a lot of hats, but in this context, I'm speaking as a family court report writer. The other hats I wear, of course, are that I'm a psychologist in private practice, I'm a family dispute resolution practitioner and mediator. I'm also a celebrant and a justice of the peace. So, you know, when you get to be
married and divorced.
Absolutely. We can handle the whole lifespan.
I like that, from start to finish. So what are you, I guess, speaking on here at the conference?
Okay, at the conference I was doing a workshop afternoon about preparation and things to be considered if practitioners are looking to become a family court report writer in private practice, as opposed to being a Category 7 writer. Mm. So looking at the things that I remember years ago thinking about myself, like, what sort of premises do I need? Do I need special equipment? What's going to be the thrust of my work? How am I going to get work? So I spoke about those sorts of things. But the overarching stuff that I wanted to get across, and I'm pleased to say from the feedback, seems to have been taken on board, is that as a family court report writer, you need to not sit on the fence, that you need to be prescriptive rather than descriptive, and that you need to own what you say. So you need to be able to work out from your observation and being aware that your observation starts from the first phone call. It doesn't just occur when someone turns up in your office. You're observing the whole time that you interact with these people. And so from all of that, that you need to reach your conclusions based on what, you need to be able to explain that. But most importantly, you have to own it. So there's no point just describing what you see, because that doesn't inform the court. So as I said to my group,
anyone can describe something.
Anyone can describe something, Zoe. That's right, exactly. So as I was saying, if you just describe and you don't make a recommendation and you can't make people understand how you reach your conclusions and why you're making your recommendation, you haven't done your job. And I feel really strongly about that, that it's important for people in that role to realise that we're there to assist the process. We're not there just to describe the process and leave the decision up to someone else. Ultimately, a judge will make that decision. But a judge is looking to our professional standing and our professional experience to assist them. Mm. If you don't make a recommendation, if you don't explain, just
why
describe.
Is it what you think?
Exactly. We've all got to be understandable. It's also potential that these reports can be therapeutic. That's not why we write them, but a good report can be therapeutic, because it might be that if we write it and it's understood by the participants, that they get what you're on about. They might go, aha, they have an epiphany, the penny drops, and they might change the way they interact. And that's glorious when you see that happen.
So how does it, I mean, this sounds, because I mean, obviously I'm a family law, but I'm not from the psychology kind of perspective, I'm coming more from as a lawyer. How do, like, is there a methodology, like, how do you, I guess this is where a bit high level, but get from sort of what you observe to what you recommend?
Okay, So I think
I've always wondered.
Oh, it depends on the family, to be perfectly honest. So you're observing from the first phone call, from when you ring up to make an appointment, mm-hmm. to explain, to reintroduce yourself, or even to talk about payments, those sorts mm-hmm. of things. So you're observing the way people respond, you're observing the way they react to you, to each other, mm-hmm. to the world, you're observing that. From that, you go through this dynamic process where you formulate hypotheses, you search, observe for evidence for your hypotheses. That might be just through interaction, through interview, formal or non-formal interview. It might be through psychometric testing if you think something is indicated, and I often use psychometric testing when it's indicated. And it's important in our reports to understand that while we understand a psychometric test, Joe Bloggs, and no offence, but a lot of lawyers don't understand that. They don't want to read all of that. They don't want to see a graph. So it's important, again, that we interpret it. Sorry?
So lawyers don't like graphs.
No, of course not. Frankly, neither do I. I mean, I'm a great believer in plain language. I like the reports to be written in a style that an adult of average intelligence could understand, get the drift of what you're on about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so with recommendations, I mean, what are the things that you, I guess, look at? Like, because, you know, this is the thing I always think there's, I mean, it's very beautiful in family law that we have this interface, like this interdisciplinary kind of aspect with all the different professions. But sometimes there's always that risk that when you're having any kind of interdisciplinary conversation, it can get, like, oversimplified.
Yes.
And I know with family lawyers sometimes, and I've been hopefully not been guilty of this, but maybe I have been, where you're like, well, at this age, so it's this arrangement, at this age, you know, it can fall into that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's sort of the maybe the family lawyer's understanding of psychology.
Absolutely.
Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And unfortunately, that doesn't take into account the fact that we learn that there are these generalisations, benchmarks, if you like, milestones, if you like, and we do consider development as well as what's happening at the moment, but they're not set in stone. Every family is different, every child is different, every human being is different, and so we have to draw from the base knowledge of those milestones, those benchmarks, and see how they apply to the family and see what's impacting those things in the family, whether the trauma or the stress or the toxicity is impacting it, and whether that would still apply if the trauma was reduced or eliminated, if the toxicity was reduced or eliminated. We need to look at the impact of those things as well. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important. It's a hugely complex process, and it's a hugely dynamic process. I think report writers have to be prepared to have a plan, and I spoke a lot about planning well ahead of the interviewing stage, what you're going to do and what you're going to seek out.
So what's the kind of planning that you
do? Sure. So get the information from the person who's requesting the report. In my case, it's most often from a lawyer. It could be from a court itself, but get that information. Then think through what, and I always get a full brief. I like to get medical reports, school reports, diagnoses, general practitioners' reports, school teachers' reports, all those sorts of things. Do some pre-reading to see if there are flags there that need to be addressed, concerns about cognitive function, concerns about drug and alcohol use, all those sorts of things, family violence, what have you. From that, then plan what you think you're going to be assessing, mm-hmm. bearing in mind that that's not set in stone. Mm-hmm. So in the course of, you might plan to do a certain thing, and then the course of the interviewing, you might think, I don't think this parent is really comprehending the conversation. So you're thinking on your feet. It's a bit like a duck swimming on a pond. It appears like a conversation. The person who's doing the assessment report is working like mad under the surface, thinking about, What else am I observing? Why am I observing that? Changing the formulation of the hypothesis. It might be that you then decide, oh, I need to do some cognitive assessment, or I need to assess for drug and alcohol use, or I need to just ask, have you used drugs this morning? You know, that sort of thing. You've got to be open to whatever information is coming. Absolutely. Yeah. You can't be set in stone.
So there's a plan, but then there's some flexibility.
Absolutely. There has to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because remember, we're only looking at it. The report talks about what we see in a snapshot of time, but if we're very careful and very observant by what we listen to, by what we see, by what we read, and we're constantly reformulating hypotheses below the surface, then that snapshot in time becomes broader.
And now, just a couple of words about Lawyer Magic, a one-day course on the secret sauce to law practice scale-up. We demystify all the parts around being a lawyer that you actually need to know to thrive in law, but usually no one teaches you. The three pillars to Lawyer Magic are the law of attraction, being magnetic, branding, marketing, and positioning yourself as an expert, the honeymoon phase, drawing clients to you, networking, building referral chains, keeping the spark alive, keeping clients happy along the whole journey and getting paid seamlessly, but in a way that clients understand the value of your work. Nicole Evans said, Zoe and Roey were fantastic. They tailored this course around our firm and our needs. We all took away a lot of practical tips and new ideas to implement on a day-to-day basis. We believe the real magic happens by identifying what is naturally unique about you, including your special passions, and showing how to amplify and communicate this. Exhibit A, hopefully like I'm doing in this podcast.
I mean, I was going to ask you, and it's not a question, but it's something that I know that, you know, lawyers sometimes question, and I know parents and clients have had questions, so I'm going to ask it just, just hopefully you can give me a good answer.
Maybe not.
Not to trip you up, but just because I'm curious if people wonder this
I'll
a lot.
I'll do my best.
How is it that like a report writer can really assess a family when they only meet them for like a day or two, whatever it is?
Yeah.
Such a limited amount of time.
It is only a snap. That's what we're talking about, this snapshot in time, and it is limited. And that's why I was talking about extending that snapshot in time by being observant from the first interaction you have, whether it's via email or a phone call or whatever. So it's not just limited to that day or that few hours that you meet the family, but it's by taking in the breadth of information you have, and you read everything to
like
formulate.
Like material, everything.
Yeah,
so
you read
everything. I
guess that
takes it back, because there might be things about what the school have noticed. Or
absolutely.
What,
so there could be paediatricians' reports, school teachers' reports, all sorts of things. Affidavit. Always read the affidavits.
Yeah.
Always read everything. So we've got a broader image of the family before we meet them. But bear in mind that all of that is only part of the jigsaw puzzle. You know, it's like psychometric tests, they're only part of the answer, they're not all of the answer, right?
Mm.
So you have to draw then on your training, your expertise and your experience to formulate your hypotheses, to test what you're doing, and acknowledge that if there's something that changes, if there's information I don't have that comes to light, then my opinion is going to change.
I mean, how is this? Because it's interesting, because it's the whole thing is always, they say, you know, as a report writer, you're not meant to find facts, but then it's very hard.
You have to find facts.
You have to sort of find something. So how does it work? Like all that sort of the fact-finding thing, which is what the court's meant to find the facts versus make findings of facts versus you make giving a recommendation. Because recommendations are based on what? Like,
well, it's really interesting that if you're able to establish a good rapport with these families, and I believe you can, if you bring to for your skills and abilities, you can establish, even in a very short space of time, a level of rapport and trust that these families have a belief in you, that you're not out to get them, that you're not on anyone's side, that you're there in the best interest of the child, and that you're going to do that, and you can make them understand that. Then quite often, believe it or not, they'll disclose to you in the course of a chat things that they haven't told anyone else. Obviously, depending what they disclose, you can or cannot mention some of those things in your report. But even if you don't mention them directly in your report for legal reasons, it still can inform your judgment. It still gives you another view through which to anticipate how that particular person might respond or behave in a situation involving the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And so you mentioned sort of about report writers, I guess, taking a stance, which I think is interesting, because sometimes you get these reports, I'm not being critical, obviously you don't
know. I know, I think I know what you're going to say.
And
go.
It's like very on the fence, and it's
absolutely
very like wishy-washy, and it's sort of like, well, what are they really recommending? So when you're talking about what Jimmy is in a pathway, at least of this in the next few years, or what do you mean when you say that?
Firstly, I want to say I agree with you. I've read some of those reports myself, and in my opinion, as I said in my session, I think the report writer hasn't done their job when they come up with a report that sits on the fence and doesn't make
a
decision.
It's not
clear. There's not a recommendation. They're saying, oh, well, if this and if the judge thinks that, then it should be this.
Maybe this.
Maybe. That's not our job. Our job is to put in place our experience and our expertise to make a judgment call, to inform the court, to inform the judge, to assist them to then make the final decision. So if we don't make the decision to own our findings and state them and say, well, we observed X, Y, Z, and by observation I mean reading, listening, all sorts of stuff, we observed X, Y, Z, that makes us think A, B, C. And because of that, we think this would be the way to go.
So you unpack the logic, like,
absolutely,
this and therefore this.
Yes.
You know, this is a recommendation.
Absolutely. And I do think sometimes recommendations can be staged. So if we incentivise a particular pattern of behaviour in the parents, then they're more likely to strive to meet that.
Mm.
So in other words, okay, Dad wants to go to 50-50, he's only got, you know, weekends at the moment. Dad's made a change. One of my case studies was Dad's put a manager in so he can work less hours.
Mm-hmm.
So let's give 3 months for Dad to try that. Let's reassess at that point. And if we've been able to achieve satisfactory, the kids are not coming home overtired and they're going to bed on time and getting their homework done, for example, then we can look at the next step. So we incentivise it, say, okay, we're not going to give you what you want right now, but if you do this, then you're going to get that. And I think that's where the report writers sometimes are afraid to own their observations. They have to trust themselves. They have to be prepared to put their professional integrity, and it is integrity, and their professional courage on the line. So you've got to trust yourself.
And where do you think the role, because I mean, it's interesting what you say, and I like what you say in terms of clear recommendations, but where does that come in terms of, I guess, clarity and kind of having a view and putting that forwards versus, I suppose, some kind of flexibility, if, you know, in a, and maybe saying, well, maybe that wasn't quite right, or like...
Oh, well, that's what I was talking about before, Zoe, where if other information comes to light, then obviously the view will change. And we've got to be open to that. Or if things change, the dynamic changes. If, for example, one of the parents remarries or has a child, or if they stop using drugs, or if we find out that they were doing something else that wasn't in our purvey before, we have to then reappraise.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I mean by it being a dynamic process. It's a dynamic process to the point where you produce your first report. But that report, while it should be solid and, in my opinion, have recommendations that you stand by, you're also going to be professional enough to say, but if I'm given new information, if new stuff comes to light, then my opinion will change, potentially.
And where do you see, I suppose, because you've been doing this for a long time. How long
have you been? Well, I don't know. A long time.
A few decades? No?
Yeah, a few decades, yeah.
What are the changes you've seen in the years of it?
Look, there's not been a lot of change. Obviously, family law, the area of family law is changing slowly, changing back, and changing again.
What do you mean? That's interesting. Why changing back and changing again?
Just some of the basic legislation about family law has changed over the few decades, but that's okay. But in terms of family reports, we've moved more to having family assessment reports. There was a time decades ago where that wasn't really done. They would get treaters' reports and, you know, even the new changes where ICLs have to meet the kids, where that wasn't a requirement before, and I think that's really good, having ICLs actually have to meet the children. That's a good thing. So the biggest change that I have noticed probably has been brought to my awareness, and this is not a criticism of anyone in particular. I understand where it comes from. Maybe I understand where it comes from. But there's been a change in family report writers, what they're doing, and that's over the last, say, 5 to 8 years I've noticed, we've had more of this fence sitting.
A lot more
fence sitting, and that's concerned me, which is one of the reasons why I'm so emphatic about it.
Why do you think
that is? Oh, boy. Why is that? I don't know. Is it lack of confidence? Is it... the work community making everyone very aware of being careful? Is it, you know, some litigious matters frightening people off? I don't know. I couldn't really say why it is, but it is a change I've noticed, that a lot more people are writing these fence-sitting reports. You know, they'll get recommendations in the recommendation section at the end of the report that says, oh, you know, if the judge thinks this, then I would go with that. And if the judge thinks that, I would go with this. And it doesn't actually say what the report writer thinks at all. And that's a concern.
I know for me, like, as a mediator, when I'm in mediation, I'm like, well, we've got the report now, so we can go to mediation. And sometimes it's still very hard to resolve when you've got...
It really is, isn't it?
Like, it makes it makes it sometimes more likely they're going to go to trial, do you know what I mean? Because you don't have the clear recommendations.
Absolutely, and I think it adds to the adversarial process when you don't make a decision, when you don't make a clear recommendation. And the whole point of everyone, I believe, all of us, lawyers, judges I speak to, believe it or not, mediators, everyone, is to not add to the adversarial process, to get it over and done with, right? We don't want this to drag on for 6 years in court.
And now a few words about artwork, where we bring art to your place of work. As some of you might know, away from the law, I have pursued a passion for art, exhibiting in London, Sydney, Melbourne, throughout China, and at a contemporary show in the Louvre in Paris. I'm now sharing my love of art and creativity with workplaces. I'd love to hear from you if you would be interested in team bonding art lessons, curated pieces for your office, or making your next corporate event a showstopper with a piece of art created live for your guests. I'm also interested in any of the other ideas you might have about how to inject creativity into your place of work and shake things up, hopefully in a good way. The benefit of working with me is that uniquely I am both an artist and a lawyer, so I have an understanding of the law firm corporate events context and can chew the fat with your guests about law, life, art, and my creative process whilst I create your special piece for your firm. Bronwyn O'Loan said, "This was truly an amazing experience. We keep getting comments from those that joined us on our special evening about how inspiring it was to watch you create such beautiful art. The memories will live on in the artwork, which will be hung proudly in our meeting space."
What do you see either changes on the horizon or things you hope will change going forward?
Well, I certainly hope that family court report writers will all start making clear recommendations and being able to explain their recommendations.
Why they think what they think.
Why they think what they think. And be able to explain that at a level where all the readers understand it.
I guess it's scary, isn't it? Because it's like, if you say very clearly, this is what I think, this is why I think what I think, then it can get picked apart. You know,
yep.
It's like, but maybe that's just what it is.
But maybe that's okay. What is wrong with that?
Exactly, yeah.
I'm happy to even take the stand and be challenged. I have no issue with that at all. Because I think if you are genuine in why you think what you think, if you haven't just gone into some abstract, pulled it down out of the cloud, you've got to be able to, and there's got to be a solid reason. It can't be just, I think it. This is really important. We have to recognise this is changing people's lives. So if you take that seriously, then you can't just pluck it out of the ether and say, I think this because
oracle,
I think it. Yeah, isn't it? And sometimes you'll get that. I think, you can't just say, I think Dad's a bad man. If you think that, you have to, I just think it.
There's got to be more like these behaviours.
Absolutely. Because I observed this, and this is how I observed the children responding, and this is how I observed Mum and Dad responding, or whatever it is, or because of, this diagnosis that I got from the psychiatrist or whatever, I have to join all those pieces together.
How particular one relates to the children.
That's
it. This is
what,
you've got to connect all the bits.
And so what's the problem if you do that, and you do it carefully, and you do it diligently and thoughtfully? So what if someone wants to cross-examine you or, as you say, pick it apart? Go for it. That's brilliant. Because in being picked apart, if you want to call it that, I'll say cross-examined. Sometimes it's not the same thing. In being picked apart, you have the opportunity to help more audience understand your thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have the opportunity to be appraised of some information you didn't have, in which case you can then
change
your own opinion. Isn't that all for the benefit of the child? And that's what this is about. It's all in the best interest of the child.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why we're here at Pacifica Congress.
It really is. And that's the beauty of being here at Pacifica Congress. We are getting to have conversations, professional and personal, with judges, lawyers, barristers, mediators, social workers, psychologists, right across the board, people who work in the family law space. And I think that's brilliant.
I mean, I like what you said earlier before we were on record. You were saying that someone came up to you after you were talking.
Oh, yeah.
Can you rewrite that? Because that's kind of the whole point of these conferences, is that sharing of ideas and that dialogue.
Look, I don't speak just to hear the sound of my own voice, right? But sometimes you think, oh, you know, especially at a Congress like this, people are coming in and out of plenaries, in and out of sessions, and you think, you know, how much impact is it really having? It's nice to come here. Have they just got their PD points or, you know, whatever? Yeah, but yesterday I had one gentleman from New Zealand who's been writing reports for 40 years, he tells me, who came up and was very complimentary. That's nice. But the important thing that he said to me was, I'm in the middle, I've just about finished writing up a paper on the voice of the child in the family law space, and on the strength of what you discussed in your session yesterday, I'm going to revisit and rewrite it. And I he thanked me, and I thought, wow, now if it was just that one voice, then I feel like I've achieved something
here. And
there'll
be other people as well that may not come and say it, but they will be impacted.
Absolutely. I've got good feedback from some of the organisers here saying, oh, everyone said you were dynamic or whatever. That's nice, but that may or may not change their practice. But just before you started this interview, Zoe, I had another woman come up and wanted to say that she was inspired to do her work and continue to do her work, and she clarified some of the things about valuing herself and owning her opinion. So I felt like, okay,
That's some
positive impact into the field. There was another one, interestingly. There was a student directly at the end of the session, and there'd been a little bit of tension on her table where we worked on case studies. And
that's always a good sign, though.
But that's a good sign. Yeah, that means they're engaged. I mean, I said a few times at the end of the session, thank you so much, you can go now if you like. I mean, I'll just sat there and kept talking.
Keep on discussing.
I was so excited to see it. Honestly, Zoe, it was just so inspiring. Anyway, this student and I, there'd been a bit of, you know, heated discussion, right? Involvement, yeah. Right? And I knew she was a student, so I drew her aside and spoke to her, and it came across that she'd done some work in the criminal space where she was used to writing reports to answer a question from the lawyer, mm-hmm. and she couldn't, no one was understanding that she was asking, well, what's the question? What, you know, tell me what the question is here. And she didn't get it, so we had a bit of a 5-minute chat, and I'm confident from what she said that she left then understanding that the question as a family court report writer is what's in the best interest of the child. And she said, oh, I get it now. No one was understanding what I was asking, and she felt like they were all attacking her, but it's just that she was not understanding. So, you know, if that student, the gentleman from New Zealand with 40 years experience, and the psychologist from Victoria, I mean, that's pretty widespread, isn't it?
Well, what I like about the guy with 40 years experience, the gentleman who's doing his paper, is it just shows you that everyone here, like I guess, we can all learn new things.
We all learn new things.
You can still go, oh, that's a different perspective.
Absolutely. We all learn from each other, and that's what I like, that we're all still learning. We learn till the day we die, I hope. I think I am. But that we learn the different perspectives. We have child contact workers, you know, we learn from them, we learn from lawyers, we learn from everybody, and it's mutual. And I love that within Pacifica Congress, we have that mutuality of respect, and we respect that we have a different perspective and that it's all complementary. I love it. It's a real network in the very genuine sense of network, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and everyone's really passionate about
what they do. Yeah, I think so. And I think that's how you survive in this space. Like, if you get people who don't work in this space saying, oh, I don't know how you do the work you do, I couldn't stand that. It's because you're passionate about it, isn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah.
And coming to these conferences, I think it does really, like, respark that. Because otherwise, we can all get so busy that we are just, like, bustling through the work.
True.
And it's good to come to these conferences to just be like, hang on, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
What are we trying to achieve here? What's
absolutely
the here? Like, just to have that breathe.
It gives us a bit of a vitamin shot, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, anything else you want to say to family lawyers in terms of, you know, when engaging a court writer, or tips for family lawyers?
Yeah, look, I would like to ask family lawyers to ensure that they give all of the information they have at their disposal to the family court report writer. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be caught out making a decision based on half of the information, particularly if I'm going to end up in the stand and then I'm going to get the information, I'm going to be asked to make a review in the stand. That's happened once. So please realise that we're all on the same page, we're all working together, we're all working for the benefit of families and particularly for children. So don't withhold information, right?
Just provide all the information.
Give all the information and we can all get the best result then.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Zoe.
That was amazing. I'm going to put links at the bottom of this interview to both your lovely self and also the Sydney Congress conference where people can join and sign up.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inside Family Law. I hope you got a lot out of it and that it has sparked a lot of questions and conversations that you'll keep having with your colleagues in the area. If you do want to stay connected with me, then please reach out on LinkedIn. You can find me, I'm Zoe Duran, or you can reach me on Instagram at Mediation Answers. My website is www.mediationanswers.com.au. If you have any fabulous ideas for a podcast interview, then please be in touch with me. Also, if you would like me to cover your family law conference, for example, or any other conference or event, I'm more than happy to discuss if this would work. So please also do reach out. Thanks very much, and I hope you listen in next time.